surprised a lot of people when Rami Youssef won a Golden Globe in January, but it shouldn't have. His show, the half-hour comedy drama Rami on Hulu, is a smart, fresh take on a young man navigating family and his Muslim faith.
Rami recently released its second season, and it's added Mahershala Ali to its cast. The result is a show that's well-deserving of that Globe and more. I'm Glenn Weldon.
And I'm Linda Holmes. We're talking about the Hulu series Rami on this episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Here with me and Glenn from Dubai, it's Bilal Qureshi. Hey, Bilal.
Hi, Linda. Hi, everyone.
It's so good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
So you wrote about Rami in the New York Times. Tell me a little bit about the piece that you just wrote.
Well, you know, I remember when I saw the show last summer for the first time, the first season, because it's kind of amazing that it already has a second season and it debuted last summer. And it was a really groundbreaking show to me, it seemed, in terms of representations of Muslims in particular on American TV, because it's really about, and, you know, we'll get into this, I'm sure, a young millennial Muslim in New Jersey sort of coming of age and being a mess in his career and his personal life, etc. And I just thought that given that we've seen mostly shows that have dealt with Muslim communities and families in terms of dramas or geopolitical thrillers, this kind of normcore Muslim millennial coming of age vibe seemed very unique to me. And I wanted to write a little bit about that and why it seemed special. And also because I grew up in, you know, as a Muslim American, and I've been watching these kinds of images for a long time, wondering when there could be just a story of someone doing very simple, basic things and yet still being interesting and not a political story. And that was what I find really interesting about Rami.
Yeah. Glenn, what are your thoughts on this show? How does it strike you?
It strikes me really well. I mean, look, this show is not a yuck fest. It's not gag, 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 punchline, 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 but that's okay. It's not interested in being one. It is, like a lot of these sort of modern day prestige comedies, let's retire the term dramedy. Let's send that up behind the bar and let's send that to a farm upstate. But it is a serious comedy that's about as chewy and thoughtful and nuanced as anything on TV. I really like this guy's stand-up. He's got an HBO special called Feelings that I recommended on the show last year. His comedic voice is gentle but sharp, and it's very much his own. Now, media that's about grappling with faith, I've said on the show many times, you know, it's not for me. It's like reading an owner's manual to a car that I do not own. But this is doing something different, because when you see depictions of religious folk on TV or in books or in film, they tend to fall into two camps. They're either portrayed as very pious, very gravid, very sanctimonious figures to be ridiculed, or sometimes outright evil. And that happens many times when the creator of the piece of media in question does not share the faith of the character in question. Or especially this happens when they used to have the same faith and then they've fallen off from that faith. Now, as Bilal mentioned in his New York Times piece, when the creator of the show or whatever and the character share the same faith, they tend to be depicted as paragons of virtue, to be revered. You know, there's an element of the didactic that creeps in, an element of lecturing. So historically, there's not a lot of gray area. This show is all gray. This show is a sea of gray, and Rami is drowning in it, and it's a lot of fun to watch him struggle. I love the scenes where he goes from zero to pious in 6 seconds, because that's when it's the clearest that he is working from the outside in, that he is striving for something, the appearance of devoutness. And the amazing thing about the show is that this character's selfish tendency to lie and to self-justify should turn us off. But this is such a soulful performance on his part. It constantly brings you back in. So I say, yeah, bring on season three.
Yeah, I like this show so much. One of the things I like about it, as you say, it's hard to make a show about faith that takes it seriously without over-explaining it all the time. You know, I think a lot of pop culture depictions of faith that don't come from specifically like Christian television or something like that tend to be a reaction to or a pushing back against the idea of what you learn from your faith growing up. And what I like about this one is that I agree with you that it's outside in, that he's striving for devoutness. But I also think they respect the fact that his desire to be a good Muslim is genuine. And it comes from, you know, he sees that as part of his search for meaning. And I do think that you know, on the one hand, obviously, part of the representation that's so important on this show is the fact that he's an American Muslim. But also the other part of it is just the fact that he's a young person for whom faith is important, and it's part of his trying to figure his life out, which I actually think is also underrepresented on American television. Bilal, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, what I meant by the idea of kind of the norm core of it is that I think it's really nice to see someone who does happen to be Muslim, but the questions that he's exploring and asking are very much, it seems to me, of this generation. Like, he struggles in his startup job. It's not really going super well. He kind of lives at his parents. He sort of is having a bit of a mess on Tinder that he's creating. Like, there's a lot of stuff in it that feels very like of the moment when you're not actually making it rain after graduation. Like, it's not working out super well. This, I think, is also important. Like, it's set in a quite middle-class home in Jersey. Like, this isn't exactly a very, not that there aren't other shows like that, but I find it's ordinariness and the economic pressures on the family in general, right? Like, the mom is a Lyft driver, the dad is struggling in his work. I think those are things that also really contribute to making the show kind of an interesting portrait of this moment and of a very ordinary American life as well, who also happens to be Muslim.
Yeah, I love that storyline with his mother, where she becomes a Lyft driver, is one of those things where I don't necessarily think about a middle-aged woman becoming a Lyft driver being a particularly rich thing to mine for character as opposed to for comedy, right? Like, for comedy, you would think so, maybe. But her experiences as a Lyft driver are one of the things that the show is using to really explore her own biases and prejudices. It was something I felt like I hadn't seen before. I love that performance as his mother. It's Hiyam Abbas, who's also in Succession. And I absolutely love that performance. I think it's so smart. And I think the characters of his mother and sister, the way that they've built this out with a bunch of other interesting people so that you're not, that's the thing, is when you have these kind of character-centered half hours, if the person is unlikable or abrasive, and I'm sure we can all think of many examples of that, you can get really exhausted from being with them all the time. So I think it's really good that you have these opportunities to spend time with these other characters who are maybe a little bit less abrasive than he can be at times.
Yeah, there's something that these prestige comedies are doing where it's the switch to another POV character episode. It usually happens around episode six, you know, and I think the first time I noticed it was back with Atlanta when we switched to Van's character, his girlfriend's character, after hanging out so long with those three dudes. We're wondering, okay, is this character ever going to get anything to do? And then she gets an episode to herself. The Ben episode in Never Have I Ever did the same thing. And there's been other examples of that a lot.
There's one in Master of None as well.
There's one in Master of None. The first season of Rami did it a couple times. This season, we get 4 out of the 10 episodes from the point of view of someone else. And it really rounds out the universe of the show.
I think the thing I wanted to mention that I really like about it is the mood of it, which is the dramedy, the prestige that you mentioned. But this one is also an A24 series, which is, you know, a studio I think that is associated with a lot of auteurism in a way and kind of a style and a mood. It's sort of indie and has a great sort of score that is not, you know, expected and predictable. There's a kind of graphical quality to it that I like as well, from the opening credits to the music in it. And I think that's part of what makes it pop and unique as well, that I think A24 films, starting from Moonlight to like The Farewell, which are things that I think of when I think of the studio, are all always distinctive and they always do get your attention. And I think that this show brings that to television as well. I'm sorry not to know of the other series that are produced by A24, but it's one of the ones that I think is a TV show from that studio that also I like about it because, yes, it happens to be Muslim, but it also happens to be a quite interesting piece of television that's also pushing the genre.
There's a piece I really liked in Slate about Rami by Ayman Ismail, and it talks about Muslim criticism of Rami. And at the center of that piece is the whole idea that when representation is so limited, that's when you get a much more kind of pinched idea of what kind of representation of an American Muslim is this? And what is it saying about people? And what is it like? Is it a good representation or a negative representation? And I think where they kind of come out with that piece after talking to a lot of different folks is that in a way, the more representation you get, the less pressure there is on each individual piece. This is something we've talked about before, is that scarcity leads to that pressure to sort of flatten people to try to make sure that it's an like an appropriate representation. And one of the things that I like about this show so much is that I think that Rami Youssef himself is very committed to the idea that I am writing a show about a specific person, as opposed to trying to be kind of all things to all people in any way.
That feeds into everything about the show. I mean, the show's approach to sex, for example, it doesn't require us to agree with Rami's take on sexual matters, you know, which is marked by guilt and shame, but it's baked into the premise of the show. And even like things like the design of the show, like, so when they go to the strip club, it's a very PG strip club. The characters espouse a very traditional moralistic approach to sex work and to sex workers. There's some lip service paid to unpacking that, but not in a way that would defy the character's worldview. They're not performatively woke people. That wouldn't be true to the characters. There's a gay panic scene in one of the episodes that starts out being played for laughs and then becomes something entirely different. And all of that is baked in. It's interesting how the whole approach of the show is reflected in the characters.
And I also think that, I mean, I like to stand up special, but I really love the show because I love the ensemble. And I think about how in the kind of conversation around representation, what's also like so important is how many great actors we miss getting a chance to see when they're not represented in TV series, because there's some actors in this show that I've never seen before ever. And the fact that the show hands off several episodes to several of them too is part of what I think makes it such a great revelation, is that it's like a lot of non-familiar faces that really pop and are amazing on screen. And it's wonderful to spend time with them in this kind of moody, funny but kind of awkward vibe that the show keeps itself in.
Yeah.
And so I also really enjoy the ensemble here.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as frustrating as the Golden Globes are, if they are good at anything, it is sometimes at finding that person who is a new, really interesting, kind of fresh voice. And I feel like that really helped to kind of raise the profile of the show a little bit, because it's doing so much that's so interesting. I so appreciate, and this is kind of from the end of the first season into this second season, there's a whole story about him going back to Egypt and trying to meet and like have an experience with the branch of his family that lives in Egypt still. And I think the way that that story is both so specific to that family, but also is really kind of recognizable, among other things, as a story about how other people's full, complete lives tend to resist your desire to have them play a role in the experience you're trying to have. Because on the one hand, you can kind of understand why when he gets there and his cousin wants to go to Chili's, why it's a bummer for him. It's like, you can understand he's like, Chili's. But at the same time, it's not the job of your cousin to give you an experience. And I liked the way that they explored that with that branch of his family. Like, it's not our job to give you that kind of authentic, like, I want to find my true self. And then he gets over there and they're just like, it's just a family. It's just a family. They're not waiting right over there to enlighten.
That speaks to the representation in a major way. This show goes out of its way to let Rami be Rami. But in pairing him in so many scenes with Mahershala Ali's Sheikh character, who is so serene and righteous and commanding, it's not the show is trying to have it both ways. It's that it's showing you a spectrum. It's showing you two different approaches, two different ways of being. It reminds me of the conversation around Love, Simon, the very mainstream gay high school rom-com from last year, which I felt was so formless and safe and desperate to be accepted and desperate not to offend, that it just comes away like lukewarm vapor. It's like a fine room temperature mist. This is grappling with something, and the show itself is grappling with something, and it's showing you both extremes. It can be profane, it can be sacred, and that's what I say. It's so nuanced and layered.
And I think the thing I wanted to mention about the Mahershala Ali character who plays the Sheikh in the season is that, in a way, that's a very groundbreaking thing for the show to also be grappling with, in part because the Muslim community, speaking of representation, like, there are also a lot of problems within the Muslim community, and there's problems around race in the Muslim American community, and a lot of times African-American Muslims are not represented in Arab and South Asian Muslim mosques. And so I think when people even think of that term, like, the show is kind of dealing with also these other layers within a community, which I think is also makes for interesting drama, because that is an internal problem that this show doesn't have any problem airing in public, because that makes it a more fearless show, I think, and also provides for some of the comedy that the show has too, and the drama. So I applaud the kind of show having a lot of courage also when speaking of the Muslim community itself and what kind of things are talked about publicly.
Yeah. I think we all dig this show, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, it's a good one. It's a good one. Check it out. You can find both seasons on Hulu. Tell us what you think about it. Come and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. When we come back, it's going to be time for our favorite segment, What's Making Us Happy This Week. So come right back.
With civil unrest, the pandemic, and the economic crisis, you want to know what's happening right when you wake up. And that's why there is Up First, the news you need in about 10 minutes from NPR News. Listen every day.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It's time for our favorite segment of this week and every week. What's making us happy this week? Glenn Weldon, tell me what's making you happy this week, bud.
Okay, The Vast of Night is a small, indie, very idiosyncratic little gem of a movie that just dropped on Amazon Prime. It's the debut feature by a guy named Andrew Patterson, and that is a name you're going to be hearing a lot more from in the future. It's set in the 50s in a tiny New Mexico town, takes place entirely at night and in real time, which is just an hour and 29 minutes. So the town's telephone operator and its radio DJ set out to investigate some weird sounds that are being heard in the air above the town. It is so stylish and assured. That's the thing that struck me. It's composed of a lot of long tracking shots. I mean, the first scene drops you into the middle of this high school gymnasium with all kinds of stuff going on. It's very rapid fire, overlapping dialogue that you can't quite follow. Characters aren't so much introduced as they just sort of show up. So for the first few scenes, you feel about 5 seconds or so behind what's happening. But soon, it teaches you how to watch it. You get into the rhythm. There's tracking shots galore, as I say. The camera swoops through the town, so you can kind of get the layout of the town. And it does it so often that you think, maybe this is classic first-time director. This is a little show-offy. But then every so often, he just holds on a character's face while they're listening to someone else talk or to other sounds. And in one case, he does it for 9 minutes. That is a long time. That shows you that he's not just about tricks. He is completely trusting his actors there, and they just completely nail it. Everything about it, the tone, the look, the feel, it just gets you excited about movies and about this director. So that's The Vast of Night on Amazon Prime. I'm going to repeat that title because I kept forgetting it. People recommended this to me over and over again, and when I went to search for it, I could not find it. It's The Vast of Night.
The Vast of Night. Thank you very much, Glenn Weldon. Ball Crushy, what's making you happy this week?
Well, as you mentioned, I'm not in the U.S. currently, and I have to say that there's quite a lot that's making me unhappy, too, about following what's going on back in the U.S. and back at home. But I will tell you what's made me happy. It was the most recent episode of Issa Rae's Insecure on HBO, which I'm a huge fan of as a show in general and have been for many years. But I've especially found the show has at the center of it a love story that's been going on for many years. And it had kind of this Richard Linklater-like episode, like a before sunset kind of episode of the two lead characters on a kind of walk through LA and on a date night. And I just found it so beautiful and so charming. And Issa Rae and Jay Ellis, who's her co-star, are just so charismatic. And I was reminded when I was watching it that I've paid attention to it consistently. I don't feel like it gets written about in big think pieces always, really. I mean, everyone knows Issa Rae is a very accomplished now kind of power player in Hollywood. But I do think that for a time when, I feel there's a lot of burden around blackness in particular, I think this show being really about something that I haven't seen very much of is a black relationship evolving, black friendships evolving, friendships, social life, kind of going out in the city, making your life. I saw one of the screenwriters tweeted in the middle of all of this that, you know, it seems a little low-key, off-key to be having a show that doesn't really grapple at all with politics or some of the heaviness, but that's also political in a way, to show the kind of idea of finding and celebrating love and life and friendship and being young and making your way. And I think watching a show that has gone on now over several seasons and you've watched these characters grow up, I found this most recent episode very moving because it was a really lovely reminder of how long we've been watching these characters grow up and go from being insecure and messy to becoming more whole. And so I loved Insecure this week, and the show usually makes me happy, and it made me especially happy this week.
All right. Thank you very much, Bilal. So as Bilal mentioned, you know, we're taping this on June 2nd. It's a very difficult time to find a lot of things that make you purely happy. So I'm just going to tell you the truth about what I used to sort of occupy myself yesterday as we taped this on June 1st. And it is a new documentary on Netflix. It is called Spelling the Dream. It is about the Scripps National Spelling Bee, hence the title. You may know the previous documentary, Spellbound, also about the bee. This one is more specifically about the Indian American families whose kids have made up the majority of the finalists in recent years. And it's just a really kind of lovely, thoughtful movie where you get to see a lot of families, kind of how they teach their kids about spelling, how their kids got interested in spelling. It's really good at pointing out it's not a bunch of really demanding parents drilling their kids. It's like kids who like things like looking up word origins, and it's very kind to them and to their families. And it also gets into a little bit how you come to have all of these Indian American kids and how they have like a JV league of spelling bees, specifically that South Asian American families go to. It's really interesting to learn about it. I found it really kind of positive and upbeat, but at the same time, it also felt humane. Enjoyed it a lot. Again, it's on Netflix. It's called Spelling the Dream. It is streaming right now, and that is what is making me happy this week. And that brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can find me at Linda Holmes. You can find Glenn at G.H. Weldon. You can find Bilal at B-Q-I-L-A-L. You can find our producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy, and our producer, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, K-A-T-Z-I-F. Thanks to you both for being here. I must say, especially Bilal, for being here from so far away.
Thank you so much for having me. It's wonderful. It made me happy to get to be with you guys.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a second, subscribe to our newsletter. It's at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. We will see you all back here next week, where we're going to be talking about Central Park, the animated series from Apple TV+.